106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Hi, guys. Hocus Biscuit Fan here.
I'm Peter.
Welcome to Popcorn with Candy, the show where we talk about the films of the late, great John Candy in chronological order. And we're finally out of the garbage, you guys. It's the Blues Brothers.
I'm excited.
It's all win from here on out.
Mostly win.
Is there bad?
There's some bad.
Like what?
Spaceballs? Wagons East?
I like Wagons East.
It wasn't awful, but it definitely ranks in the ones we've been doing.
I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I remember liking it. Anyway.
It's mostly gold.
A little preview for the Wagons East episode coming up in a year and a half. Yeah, this is 1980, The Blues Brothers, directed by John Landis. Great movie.
I was pleasantly surprised.
I love it. It's a classic. I'm really hesitant because I have some gripes with this movie. There's a few things that I don't like and some stuff that I need to say. And it's a classic. I love this movie. But like any movie, there's problems with it. You know, it's too long.
Was it?
It's over 2 hours.
It was entertaining, though. It kept it going.
I think they needed to cut about 20 minutes out of this.
I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I do too. That's my big gripe. And there's a couple of parts that I'm like, these are the parts that they could cut. But I have to say, this movie is beautiful.
The music in it's great. I was really impressed.
The cinematography is ridiculous, too. It's so well shot.
It was, yeah.
Even the opening scenes, it's just, it's crazy well shot. Just
the great sunset scene in the beginning.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
It's excellent. The cast is ridiculous. So basically everybody in this is somebody of note. John Belushi as Jake Blues, Dan Aykroyd, amazing as Elwood Blues, James Brown, Cab Calloway, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin. This movie is so rife with amazing people that even the extras are ridiculous. A couple of extras that I found, I don't know if you picked this up, but Uncle Phil, Mr. James Avery, is an extra in this.
I think I spotted him.
I did too.
I paused in the dancing in that scene.
It's outside of Ray's music exchange. And I was just like, is that really him or does it just look like him, you know?
But that smile on his face, he's got those Uncle Phil cheeks.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't big, but he had the cheeks.
I've never spotted him, but apparently Mr. T is in this as well.
Really?
He's just a guy on the street.
Nice.
And Joe Walsh from the Eagles is one of the prisoners.
Weird.
I didn't spot him. I've tried to find him multiple times. Can't spot Joe Walsh.
Wow.
But I'm sure I could look it up and see the scene he's in. This is just rife with great people. Henry Gibson from the Burbs is great in this as the Illinois Nazi guy. Carrie Fisher is great in this.
She's pretty good.
I mean,
she's a terrorist, but she's pretty good.
She's better in this than she is in Star Wars.
I don't know. That's hard to say for fanboys.
No, it's super
And I'm pretty close to a fanboy.
Yeah, but think about A New Hope with the weird accent and then halfway through, nope, get rid of that, Carrie. Lord Vader. Like, it's crazy.
I get an accent occasionally.
Oh, man.
It doesn't make sense. I have a kid with a Texas accent. She's never been to Texas.
Oh, man. So it opens with the city looking like hell. Like, straight up hell.
It's standard Chicago of the 80s.
Yeah, and just opens in silence. It's beautiful. And then you have Jake getting out of prison.
Yeah, the first thing you see of him is getting off the bunk, and then you see his back.
Yeah.
And there's just some people, you know who they are by looking at them from any angle, and you know he's a Belushi, and you know he's John.
I am so blown away by the fact that he has his own name tattooed on his knuckles.
They both do.
Elwood has it?
Yeah.
How is his tattooed on his knuckles? I've never seen that.
He's got most of it on his right and then a couple on his left. The steering wheel when he pulls up.
Oh, I've never noticed that. Why would you get your own first name tattooed on your knuckles?
I don't know. Why not?
And Jake doesn't know how to write or read, does he?
Or he just signed it with an X to do it.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do
it. Oh, yeah, because he reads the sign for Bob's Country Bunker.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that scene because it's a standard getting out of prison scene.
Yeah.
It's a nice, slow build. He's standing up against the thing, and Frank Oz, just looks at him and the officers with him, and they yank him back behind the line. Good scene, just
I love him guy behind not caring. The line, leaning forward to sign the paperwork. That's so great.
Yeah.
The stuff he gets back is one Timex broken, One unused prophylactic, one soiled.
I love that he grabs his pen and picks it up with his pen.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Elwood picks him up. The scene of him getting out of prison, all of this stuff is so well done. It's just beautifully shot. And then he, you know, the gate opens up and they've got this beautiful thing and he's bathed in light.
I was thinking they must have waited all day for just the right time and angle to do both of those scenes.
There's so much. I mean, this movie is bananas. It's like Michael Bay bananas with all the car crashes and stuff.
Amazing budget for something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a bizarre movie. I mean, this is an SNL movie.
They must have crashed over 1,000 cars.
Yeah. It's a record setter.
It's a crazy number of police cars that they crashed.
I'm curious if the Fast and Furious movies have even come close.
Maybe. Because they've done a lot, too.
But this is just weird to have that big of a budget for this weird sketch on SNL. I mean, it wasn't even really a sketch. Do you remember watching these?
No, I don't.
They'd have goofy things in there, but they would just be pretty straightforward musical performances.
Nice.
I mean, I always laughed at Aykroyd's dancing in them, but I mean, to turn those goofy little musical performances into this, with this whole world, was brilliant.
I was disappointed in Blues Brothers 2000, and I was not looking forward to this because of that.
It's weird that you saw that one first.
I don't know. It's just something that happened to be on cable, I think. I'm going to have to see it again and see if it's any good after seeing the first one. But I just remember it not being any good.
I can't think of a movie where I've seen a sequel without watching the first one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's so weird to me. Like, oh, I'll check out this Terminator thing. Oh, I have The Road Chip. The only Alvin and the Chipmunks I've ever seen. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay, that's weird.
Just lost all credibility for my taste in movies, I guess.
We'll cut that to save you.
No, leave it in, I don't care. Good on you, Alvin and the Chipmunks. So, Jake hates the new car, and
I like that he lights a cigarette, throws the lighter out the window.
That's the best.
He hates on the car, and Elwood convinces him. And yeah, he says, where's the cigarette lighter?
Yeah, he jumps that bridge and he's like, so is it the new Bluesmobile? Fix a cigarette lighter. Yeah.
So Elwood takes Jake to the orphanage they grew up.
Yeah, to visit the penguin. I love that they call her the penguin.
Yeah. Jake doesn't want to go, but Elwood just gets out and they go in. I like the creepy, creaky stairs they're going up and they're all nervous and the door. Somebody obviously just reaches over and slams the door.
The cinematography is so good in this.
Yeah.
I haven't watched this in like 20 years, but I forgot how beautiful it was.
It was great.
And I think that's why it holds up so well.
Maybe.
Every shot just looks so iconic. I don't think it's like a laugh out loud, laugh a minute type of comedy.
No, some of the comedy was dumb.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt the movie.
Right.
So they finally get up and they see the penguin. And they have a conversation. She's talking about she needs to get the tax assessor money.
Yeah, so they need to get $5,000 to save the place or they're going to sell the building to the school board.
And Jake's all, $5,000? You got it. You'll have it tomorrow. And she gets mad. I don't want any of your dirty money.
Yeah, I love that. And just the swearing scene is so great. They start to swear and getting ruler slapped or yardstick slapped. And each time they get hit, they say another swear or blasphemy.
Yeah, it's great. And then eventually she just got it between their heads going back and forth.
Yeah, I love it. And just beat them essentially until they fall down the stairs.
And that's stuff that nowadays people try and they fail so miserably.
Yeah.
I don't know why that scene was so good.
I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely better than you see sort of the copycats.
So they're down the stairs and we get Cab Calloway.
Yeah, Curtis. He's great in this. Cab Calloway. I had no idea that that guy would have the acting chops that he did. But, like, there's a lot of bad acting in this. And usually it's like, oh, yeah, because this guy's a musician type of thing. But Cab Calloway does great in this, and he also looks like he's having a blast making this movie.
Yeah.
And Aretha. Aretha's super good.
She is.
She's got some acting chops.
I was impressed with Cab Calloway and his age.
Yeah.
The fact that he was able to do all that he did at his age. He was impressive.
He was awesome. And he's clearly, they talk about how he was the only one that was nice to him. He's clearly they look up to him.
Right, that's where they got their style. He's dressed exactly the same way.
Yeah. What's funny is Cab Calloway in that suit looks good. Jake and Elwood somehow make a black suit look like hobo clothes.
Kinda.
When you see him in that dinner scene later on, You see all these people in nice suits and stuff. They're in a black suit. Should look nice. Somehow they look like homeless people in that scene.
Yeah, kind of.
So Curtis tells them they need to go to church and see the preacher. I forgot the preacher's name. It's a great name. Did you note it?
I didn't. I just got James Brown.
Yeah, it's James Brown.
Who told them to church up? I really liked that term.
Yeah. Was that Curtis?
I don't know. Maybe it was one of them saying they need to church up, but I like the term.
That is a good term.
So they walk into this church and James Brown is the preacher.
The extras in this scene are so psyched to see James Brown. If you watch the scene, you can just see all eyes are on him. They just look psyched that they're there seeing James Brown.
You know, they're just amazing actors that are extras.
I doubt it. I mean, usually they just fill a room with some people.
But most of them were dancers.
Shaka Khan is in this scene as well. Right, right. Yeah, I was just like, Shaka?
The dancing in this is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so impressive.
I feel like they had like 20 dancers and a bunch of extras.
It was one of the best gospel dance scenes in a church I've ever seen.
And I have to say, black church is the best church. It's so much better than just, like, boring white people church.
So they're getting through the sermon, and Jake sees the light. Quite literally, a light coming in the window, and he's all lit up blue.
Yeah.
And Elwood's just standing there wondering why he's shaking and getting weird.
Can you think of a movie that's a comedy movie where somebody has a belief in God and it's not a joke? I can't think of another movie. It's rare. Usually if somebody... If somebody was saying they were on a mission from God, it would turn out, they would fall on their face.
They're the butt of the joke, usually.
Right, yeah.
This one's great.
I love it. I love that that's not the joke. They are absolutely on a mission from God.
And they're telling everybody throughout the movie.
I love it.
In the best way.
Yeah.
Like, Elwood saying that constantly is awesome.
How killer is Dan Aykroyd?
I love Dan Aykroyd.
Watching this, I was just thinking about his range.
Yeah.
You know, you have him as Ray in the Ghostbusters movies. That's a completely different character than him as Roman in Great Outdoors. Or him as Elwood in this. Or, you know, he's so rangy. For him to just have these slight changes in characters, you know. Like Bill Murray, Caddyshack Bill Murray, that's a broad character. You know, Dan Aykroyd does these sort of small changes to a character. Like, Elwood's a guy you could meet. I've met guys that are like Elwood.
He's really quirky, too. There are weird things about him we don't get an explanation for.
Yeah, and that's kind of the genius of his, like, character creation, you know? I love that guy. I mean, and hats off to Belushi, too. We hated on him all through 1941, and I'm so psyched that this was right afterwards.
I feel much better about that, because obviously it's not all him.
I will say, I like Animal House. I think Animal House is a good movie. I think he's okay in it. But he was just kind of like this gross character. And I feel like in 1941, they were just like, let's have him be this gross guy again. And it's just, that whole movie is just so garbage.
We did enough of that movie. Let's enjoy ourselves now.
Yeah, I'm just saying, this is why people like Belushi.
This makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, he sees the light and he starts saying the band.
And then does some awesome dancing.
Aykroyd's dancing is the best.
I don't know. Belushi did a good job, too.
Well, Belushi, some of that's got to be a stunt double or something, right?
I was questioning some of
that. The backflips?
Maybe the backflips, the multiple, but he's doing some of it.
For sure.
Like, when it comes up, he's just come from a flip.
Yeah.
When it comes back from all the dancing.
Or they did that flip thing, and he was ducking behind the camera and popped up looking exhausted.
Yeah, maybe.
And did jazz hands.
But there's some good scenes of him dancing, too.
Yeah. And then they're driving. They're going to get the band back together. And Elwood wasn't exactly straight with Jake while he was in the joint.
Great quote.
It's the best quote.
I took the liberty of bullshitting you.
Right. And then they get pulled over.
And that leads to a car chase.
What's great about it, they get pulled over... Elwood, they get brought up on their little computer system in the car. He has 56 moving violations. That is so many tickets. Like, your license would be revoked, right?
Probably.
I have maybe 12.
Oh, my God.
And I thought I had a lot. 56 is unheard of.
That's crazy.
You know, he talks about serving time at 1.2. Is it all just driving related?
Maybe.
Yeah, so they peel out. And I feel like this is 25 minutes into the movie right here. Just this setup. And this is one of my gripes. I feel like all of this could have been done in 5.
But so much of it was so good.
Did the church scene need to be like 10 minutes long?
That was a long scene.
It's a little long.
But it was highlighting James Brown.
Yeah.
They might have had to have that in.
Right.
That might have been an obligation.
I feel like so much of it could have been trimmed a little bit.
Probably.
There's no need for it to be the Penguin. It could have just been Cab Calloway running an orphanage, right?
Maybe.
I'm just saying there's room that they could have trimmed that.
You got to see some of their character development happening. They respect her, but they don't like her. It fits.
Yeah, and I like it. I'm just saying 25 minutes is a long time before you get to, here's the purpose, here's your mission.
After 1941, this is nothing.
Yeah, no,
stop, man, complaining.
When does the plot kick in for 1941? Hour 2 hours in. 2 hours. 2 hours in, the plot happens.
Right. It was all set up before that. In the car chase, we get the first of the good line.
We're on a mission from God.
Yeah, they're not going to catch up. We're on a mission from God. I do it horribly, sorry.
He almost sounded like an old gangster. Like, yeah, see, we're on a mission from God.
See, I don't do accents. I do them accidentally.
This is the mall chase, and this is remarkable.
This is GTA.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto. I was enjoying this car chase.
So much of this movie is Grand Theft Auto inspiration. It just had to be.
I just wanted to be playing it, watching this. It was great.
I'm shocked that there hasn't been an Elwood or Jake character in Grand Theft Auto.
They need to do a Blues Brothers Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Chicago, back then, those style cars.
But I don't want to see Elwood and Jake murder people or bed down with hookers.
No, but have them there somewhere.
Yeah.
In a car chase scene where you're supposed to drive with them, maybe.
But I think that explains it. These characters, I don't want to see them doing gnarly Grand Theft Auto crimes.
But how awesome would it be to do these kinds of car chases?
Yeah, it would be fun.
This was basically an A-team. Nobody dies in this movie.
There could have been some deaths.
Yes, there's... If you took some of this stuff literally, thousands of people would be dead.
No, people die in this.
Who?
The Nazi. He's super dead.
You don't know that.
There's no way he lives.
They walked out of a building explosion. They will crawl out from under a pile of bricks.
This is very cartoony. So there is some inspiration for GTA, but I kind of don't want to see Elwood murder people.
I agree.
The mall chase is remarkable to me because they drive through the mall to try and get away. Do you think real cops would drive into the mall as well?
I was thinking that too, and it's just movie cops.
Yeah. They do more damage than Jake and Elwood.
Kind of, yeah.
It's ridiculous because Jake and Elwood navigate it, and it's so great when they're just like, oh, look, you know?
This place has got everything.
Yeah. It's so great. They're just so nonchalant about everything. But the cops are the ones that are doing weird maneuvers and, like, backing into stuff.
Slamming into shops. Every store has been hit by a cop.
I'm a little disappointed that Jake and Elwood are responsible for taking out the music storefront.
Whatever.
Yeah, it just bummed me out. Like, guys, that was a perfectly good drum set. And the extras look like they were in danger while filming these scenes.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Impressive stunt work.
Yeah. It's so bright and beautiful, too. All the shots. This movie, just like, hats off to the cinematographer. There are times where my notes were just like, this shot rules.
So they get away.
Yeah. They get away. It's amazing. And then we have Carrie Fisher sitting outside a hotel. You see a lot of bad smoking in movies. And as a smoker, like, I pick it up. Like, that person doesn't smoke. That's a smoker enjoying a cigarette there.
Yes.
She smokes like a champion.
Yes. I've learned a lot about Carrie Fisher through things I've seen and even meeting her, and she's awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's definitely a smoker.
And pulls out a bazooka.
I don't know what that was, but it had four chambers.
Yeah.
That thing was awesome. And I thought at my first time through it was just the scene, how movies will do that one thing happens four times just because you want different angles. No. That has four rockets in it.
Yeah, it's a quadzooka.
And perfect timing, they jump to the ground, blow up the door, stand up, walk in the door.
I love that. I love that they just do not care.
It's nonchalant
just, they
walk
don't
in.
Even like look like, there's no like, what was that? They just dust themselves off and walk in. It's the best.
I love that they get upstairs and nobody has reacted to that either. There's like a rec room full of people. I don't know what it was, an apartment they're in?
There's a bum laying on the stairs, like, right where the cone of destruction is ended. Yes. And he's just chilling there. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So a cop has left a card at the hotel and hands it to Elwood. Elwood hands it to Jake. Jake throws it on the floor.
Throws it at the window.
Yeah. There's just so much great little comedy in this movie. You know, just a little scene like that just adds so much to it. So they get to Elwood's place. And Jake crashes out on his bed. His apartment is so rad.
It's amazingly tiny.
Yeah.
I like that Jake says, love the apartment. And then he says something about the train. He says, it goes by so often you won't notice it.
I love it so often. It's kind of a beautiful little scene, though, too. So, like, Jake crashes out and Elwood kind of puts a blanket over him. And he's just, like, sort of making toast and just staring out the window, listening to some music.
Jake's all, what are you doing? He's making dinner. And he's got this coat hanger. He made a little stove to toast his white bread.
Yeah, just white bread.
And that's one of those quirks we see a little bit more of, but all he eats is white bread, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to know that. But we don't get an explanation.
No, it's not crazy. At all. I love it. Yeah. I just think, you know, my complaint about this movie being too long is also sort of, I mean, hats off to him that they sort of let it breathe.
There's some amazing stuff because of it.
Yeah.
Like, they're talking about, oh, the cops are going to find us here. No, I gave him this address. And he gives him an address. And Jake's all, that's Wrigley Field.
1060 Addison. Yeah, so they wake up in the morning.
No.
No, yeah.
Okay, so at 38 minutes in, 38 and a half, John Candy as Burton Mercer.
Yes. And he figured out the Wrigley Field thing.
Right.
I think his first line is something like, I love that Wrigley bit.
And he escorts the cops into their place, talks to the guy at the window.
How rad is his coat?
It was interesting. He's got great style.
It's so Silent Partner outfits. I love this so much.
It's good.
Oh, little piece of trivia I got from our good friend Tracy Morgan at Tracy Mixbag on Twitter. She's working on the John Candy biography, Searching for Candy. Right?
Okay, go ahead.
What are you laughing at me?
That's a great plug.
Giving her a plug.
Yeah.
She gave me a great piece of trivia. John, his wife was pregnant with Jennifer, his daughter at the time. So he had in his contract for this movie that he could leave whenever. So, like, baby's coming. Gotta go, guys.
Nice.
I need to put that in his contract.
That's great.
I thought that was a cool little piece of trivia.
That's great for such a small part to give him that.
Yeah. And, like, and what a cool thing. Like, who's going to deny you that, though? Like, well, I really want to see my kid. Like, whoa, this is Hollywood.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So Carrie Fisher returns.
And murders.
It, yeah.
1,000 people.
She fools a straight up 9/11. Like, she explodes a hotel full of people.
Well, I was going to go more like Unabomber. It's a little older and a little less tragic.
Sorry, guys.
She takes out a building full
of
people.
An entire building.
That we know has at least 100 people in it.
Raises it to the ground. Completely destroys it.
And then Jake and Elle would wake up.
And again, every time, I love that they just dust themselves up. It's 9 o'clock. We gotta get to work.
Yeah, that was great.
No reaction. They leave, and then the cops are getting up out of the rubble as well.
Cartoonish. That makes it a little better because I was feeling really bad that Carrie Fisher was a terrorist.
Man, I think this has such a cartoony feel to it, where even though she blew that building up, I never thought of her as a terrorist. So they go to Mrs. Tarantino's house to find Murph.
The last known address of Murph.
So she doesn't really have anything. The black suits thing is genius. Because, you know, everybody thinks they're the cops or the CIA or something like that. I'm convinced you put on a black suit like that, you can just walk indoors.
Maybe, yeah. Are you the police?
No, man.
No, man, we're musicians.
That is a good scene. So she runs out and she gives him a card, and it's for Murph and the Magic Tones. Should we play a little bit of that? They show up at the Holiday Inn to his concert.
Okay, enjoy some Quando, Quando, Quando.
Amazing.
I like it.
The band is so great. My favorite nickname for the band members is Willie Too Big Hall. Willie Too Big. It's so juvenile, but I love it.
The band is made up of amazing musicians.
Yeah.
Not just extras or unknown actors. amazing musicians.
That's why the acting's a little wonky, but it's so forgivable, because you're like, everybody's a legend in this movie.
I didn't
even
notice any problems with the acting.
It's a little wonky in the scene where they're talking, like, it's like, well, Jake, you still owe us money, you know? It's...
Okay.
It's a little amateur, but they did good. I don't want to hate on this movie. These guys are amazing in this, but... So the band is basically exposition guys. They lay out exactly what the mission is for the next part of the movie.
And apparently why Jake was in jail.
Yeah. The next scene we have the Ace Ventura parking scene. They're going to pick up Mr. Fabulous and they do the sweet U-turn e-brake park maneuver.
Really? I missed that.
Yeah, it's great. It's so Ace Ventura.
Nice.
It's the genesis of that.
Nice.
But they go to pick up Mr. Fabulous, the horn player, and he's the maitre d' at this restaurant.
And they let themselves in.
Yeah, and they sit down to eat. I love that Mr. Fabulous is on the phone and talking to one of the customers, and he's just like, 5 years. And they're like, no, I'm sorry, not you. I thought you got 5 years. This restaurant scene is amazing.
He says something on the phone like, no, sir, he doesn't eat here anymore, he's dead.
Yeah. This restaurant scene is the best part of this movie for me. It's my favorite. Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman,
is
one of the waiters. And this is where I was saying they look like hobos in here. They're wearing nice suits.
But it's not that kind of a nice suit.
Right.
And they just torture some of these people. The line, how much for your daughters? How much for your daughters? And how much for your women? And
the tossing the shrimp into the mouth scene is so great to me. So he does it the one time, and then at another point he just throws it away, and they just cut to the shot of Belushi catching it. I love this scene so much. They polish off a $150 bottle of Dom Perignon, and
oh, they torture everybody there. It's great.
This is so remarkable. Just the way they get this guy to join the band.
They just beat him down.
Yeah.
And he gives up. They leave, and he just sits down in their chair, and the guy at the next table, sir, sir. And he's just ignoring him.
And then it cuts to a Nazi rally.
Weird U.S. Yeah. Nazi rally.
And Henry Gibson, dude from the Burbs, creepy neighbor from the Burbs.
He's done some great weird roles.
And he was in Laugh-In, right?
I don't remember.
I think he was Laugh-In. He's great. That guy's amazing. But what a bold move to be like, oh yeah, you want to be a Nazi in this movie?
Why not?
The stuff that he says is straight up Nazi stuff.
Right.
I mean, he has a little monologue of just hate speech.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm always shocked by people who are like, yeah, I'll take that gig. I'll do that job. It's just like all the poor ladies that took the gig as like fat woman number two on Married with Children. And like, what a bummer for that audition process. Like, oh, I'm an actress. Oh, have I seen you in anything? Like, yeah, I'm the fat lady on episode 314 of Married with Children. Or can you imagine? I'm like, oh, I really hope I get it. I had an audition for Fat Woman Number 4 on Married with Children.
That's funny.
Ugh, I really want it. So, yeah, the Nazi rally is bizarre. And, like, do American racists love Hitler?
I don't know.
Hitler's not super awesome for Americans, even if you're white.
He did Inner Space.
Henry Gibson?
Yes.
What'd he do?
He was the boss at the grocery store.
You're right. Yeah. So they run the Nazis off the road, off the bridge, into the water. And then they vow to kill them.
We're going to find them somehow. Yeah, weird.
I love that even the cops are stoked that they ran them off the bridge.
Yeah.
And then we have the diner scene.
We have John Lee Hooker playing on the street.
That's right. John Lee Hooker killing it.
That was great. I wish he was involved more because that was amazing.
There's so many great nods to all these great people in this movie. I mean, you can tell this is all done out of like reverence.
Right.
That's why it's so wonderful.
Yeah, it was great.
The diner scene is one of those scenes that I think needs to be removed from this movie. And this is tough to say because I think Aretha shows some acting chops in this. This is the worst version of Freedom ever, this movie version.
It seemed like a musical at this point when nothing else had seemed like a musical.
Right.
Yeah, there's music, out of nowhere. This was too musical-ish. It was like bad stage musical.
You could have just cut this.
Nothing against Aretha. She's great and I enjoyed it. But it just doesn't fit in the rest.
No. It's really bizarre. This and the following scene.
None of the other music in this is storytelling. Yeah. And that didn't fit.
I get it. The thing, this is how Blues Brothers 2000 went bad. Because Blues Brothers 2000 was all this scene.
Then that's exactly the problem.
Yeah. But I like Aretha in this. She does a good job. They pick up Matt Guitar Murphy there. It's the only funny part of it is the saxophone player watches Matt Murphy leave the diner to go take off with Elwood and Jake.
Lou Marini, another amazing musician.
Is he really? Yeah. I didn't look him up. I just love that. Like, well, go on, you know. And their food orders are pretty good, too. Jake orders 4 whole fried chickens.
And white toast.
Yeah, white toast for Elwood.
I like that. And he knew them by their order.
Yeah.
So
great.
There's that whole white toast thing that I love. It's great.
And we have Carrie Fisher at the Curl Up and Die Beauty Salon for just like a moment. That could have been cut as well.
Yeah.
She's reading about making a flamethrower.
They needed something to jump between scenes because we don't want to just go straight to Ray Charles.
Well, Ray Charles is good in this, but he didn't need to sing that song. I guess Ray Charles offers to be in your movie. You put him in there singing a song.
Of course. These people, you have to give them the music.
How good is Ray Charles in this, by the
way? Did he have to shoot at a kid?
That's amazing to
me. It was funny, but it was a little weird.
Yeah, it's so harsh.
Yeah.
He is so likable and good in this.
He did a good job. It was great. There's not much action in these keys. And he shows them up. It was great.
There's another cinematography caps off to him in this where it's just a shot of Ray playing. And in his glasses reflected, you see the keys. It's just a great shot. But yeah, so Ray ends up hooking him up with some music.
Great dance scene throughout this time.
With Uncle Phil.
Uncle Phil out front dancing. Hard to find. I don't know if I actually did find him, but he's there. And now there's a second Bluesmobile, and it's pink.
It's the Murph and the Magic Tones.
Murph and the Magic Tones?
Yeah.
Crossed out and spray-painted.
The Blues Brothers Band. I love that car so much. So we're pulling up at a Howard Johnson's.
Elwood asked Jake, who are you going to call? And I had to note that. I just had to note that.
Yeah. Jake goes to call the booker. And then Carrie Fisher shows up and flamethrowers in, but they're right next to a propane tank. And they explode, and the telephone booth shoots up into the sky like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure style. Comes down, they just get up and dust themselves off.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that they continued that. The first couple of times, you're like, what the hell, you know? But it just becomes so cartoony and hilarious. Just they're always cool.
So they're driving around trying to find the gig. And Jake says, there!
Bob's Country Bunker. I love Bob's Country Bunker because they walk in there and they're talking to the bartender. They're like, what kind of music do you usually play in here? Both kinds, country and western.
Yeah, I have that down here too. I like, they got the name wrong. Because it has the Good Old Boys on the sign.
The Good Old Boys are going to play it there. They bomb with their first blues song. And this bar is amazing. This is like Roadhouse, the Double Deuce. They're playing behind the chicken wire. Bottles are exploding as they're being hurled at them.
No matter what.
And
because they hate the song and that's happening.
Yeah.
But then they start loving when they get into Rawhide.
When they play Rawhide, they love it. Still bottles flying.
Yes.
It's the drunkest audience ever.
It was great. And I love Jake throughout Rawhide.
It's so good.
Just standing there, stone-faced, arms crossed. And he just jumps in for the counterpoint or whatever. And then goes and grabs the whip.
The whip is great. And then they go into Stand By Your Man.
I really liked Stand By Your Man. It was good. And everybody crying and cuddling. And the guy by himself just sitting there about to cry.
And Bob screws him over. Bob tells him they were going to get paid $200, but they drank $300 worth of beer. So they owe him $100. You do kind of think during this, where's the real Good Old Boys?
Yeah, I like that they arrived, though.
Yeah, they do arrive, but it's...
So Jake goes and tries to collect the money.
When were they going to play? They show up long after everybody's gone. Were they going to show up at 4 in the morning?
They don't explain it, but they must have gotten lost or something. Yeah. Jake tells them they got to split because he wants them to pay the tab.
Yeah, he tells the band to take off.
Then the Good Old Boys arrive, and they play some bit about being with a union.
Yeah, they're the musicians' union and ask them about their union papers and stuff. The Good Old Boys' outfits are killer, aren't they?
It's pretty good.
I think it's Charles Napier. I love he gets out and he's like, I'm the lead singer and the driver of the RV. It's just so cheesy. I love it. Jake and Elwood kind of work this deal to split on Bob and take off.
I like that as he's going to the car, Elwood turns the car on. He's like, I usually sit down in the seat and sign on the dash. Yeah. Just to get the guy to not freak out that he's getting in the car, but he's obviously getting nervous. And the lead singer of the Good Old Boys walks up to try to see what's going on, and they take off.
And the Good Old Boys chase them.
With
Bob.
Bob.
Shooting at them.
Yeah.
And then the cops from the mall see the Bluesmobile and decide to take off after it. And
the Good Old Boys kill those cops.
Yeah. The car crashes in this are just amazing.
Everybody should be dead.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie dies, basically.
And then the great sauna scene.
Oh, the sauna scene was great.
It's a beautiful scene. They're just in there in their hats and glasses. Just the way it's shot, the way they're all positioned in it, really well done.
It's funny because they're you're seeing them mostly naked. I love that.
There's only, I think, one scene where you see Jake without his glasses.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
The beginning?
No, you don't see him with his glasses. You only see him from behind. They don't show his face until he's got his glasses on. It kind of makes that one scene where he takes them off work better. But, yeah, the sauna is great. They're trying to get this guy, and he books him at the palace for the next day. And I love when they pan out. They have this conversation. The guy finally agrees to book him at the palace.
And it's just the three of them.
Yeah, then it cuts out, and there's the entire band just sitting on the other side. Come on, boys.
Yeah, it's great.
Then we're back at the orphanage, and Cab Calloway, or Curtis, is talking about... talking to the kids, giving them a pep talk on how they need to go spread the word to save the orphanage.
It was this scene I realized that Curtis was a real person, not a ghost. That's weird to think, but you're going back to a place where you just got kicked out by a nun. There's no mention of him, and he's just like this inspirational guy from your childhood. Why wouldn't he be in one of these movies, like, as a ghost inspiring him?
This movie would be so much cooler if he was a ghost.
Well, you see what his magic powers later on anyway, so you never know, he might be.
Then this scene with the orphans spreading the word and putting up the posters, this is where Cab Calloway looks like he was having the best time ever.
I bet he was.
You see him with those kids, he looks like he's genuinely smiling and just having a blast.
He looks like an awesome guy.
I love the kids. This is just like an adorable moment, but they're all spreading the word. Ray hanging up the poster upside down in his shop makes me laugh. And then the bathroom graffiti campaign is amazing to me. We need to do that for this podcast. If you're a fan of the show, write it above a urinal.
Please don't. Please don't.
Please do.
Oh, come on.
Every time.
No.
It worked for the Blues Brothers.
I love that. They ended up in jail.
They ended up with the $10,000 advance on their record deal as well. They kind of won.
Well, in jail.
and while they're out and about, they run out of gas.
They're driving around with a gigantic speaker on the Bluesmobile.
Yeah, it's great.
It's comically gigantic.
And they're comically driving through completely desolate places and then a completely packed beach. It's just great.
Yeah.
But they run out of gas and they end up at Lloyd's gas station and Lloyd's is out of gas.
The truck was running late.
And Twiggy pulls up.
And Elwood scams her?
He scams her and hits on her.
But it works. Later on, she's at the motel waiting. I was amazed. And she's all sad.
I love that he scams her, though. Just, I love that she thought he worked there. Like, have you ever been to a gas station? Dude's just in a full suit.
You haven't been?
No.
Okay.
That would work as a novelty gas station now.
Yeah.
Blues Brothers Gas. Copyright 2016, dude. Let's go do this.
Yeah.
So the band is at the palace. Everybody wants the show.
John Candy comes back at an hour and 34 in. That's where he's at the police station.
Yeah, and he gets the poster handed to him. The thing that bothers me is in the beginning, Jake gets his watch back. And they say, you know, one Timex, broken. Right here... Jake checks his broken watch and says they're going to be late.
Nice.
Not a big beef, but... Yeah. And they're in the tunnels and they're headed to the palace. At a certain point, he finishes that bottle and he mentions it with Night Train. I don't think you've ever had Night Train.
Nope.
Night Train is straight up hobo wine.
Nice.
And it's the worst experience of your life. Do not ever drink Night Train if you're listening to this. It's the worst.
The more you know.
Do, 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 do. Please throw that in there. I am a a seasoned veteran of alcohol, and I cannot finish a bottle of Night Train. I tried to finish one bottle of Night Train, and it used to be a challenge with my friends and I. It was like, whoever can finish a bottle of Night Train wins. Cab Calloway opens up the show.
To a packed ballroom.
Somehow it worked. Bathroom Graffiti's where it's at.
That was a packed room for one day.
Yeah. I love this scene with Cab. So he opens up, and I'm pretty sure it's his imagination. But everybody's just in their regular clothes. When the curtain opens up and they're going to play Minnie the Moocher, everybody's in white suits and...
Yeah, it was a great costume and stage change. But, like, they're all, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? He's like, do you guys know Minnie the Moocher? And they say, yeah. And he hit it and just turns around, curtains open, and everything's white. And it's an amazing scene.
It's beautiful. And then as the audience is clapping, it cuts back to Cab and his POV, and then it's just him in the regular clothes again. So I feel like it was more of just like in his imagination type of thing.
But this movie's been that way, you never know.
Right.
Either that or he's actually a ghost.
Yeah. Apparently, when working on this, Cab really wanted to do his disco version of Minnie the Moocher.
Aww.
And was disappointed when they wouldn't let him do it.
I'm glad they didn't.
I'm so glad they didn't.
I really enjoyed that. I'd love to hear it, but I don't know if I'd want it to be immortalized in a movie like
that. No, it's such a better move to keep just Minnie the Moocher.
The classic version's amazing, and he does it so well.
He does. It turns into a bit of a concert film here. Some of this stuff isn't needed, but it's nice to see. This Cab Calloway scene didn't have to be in there. You didn't have to show the whole song. Could have just shown cuts of him doing stuff, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah. In the meantime, Jake and Elwood park under a bridge with cops on top.
Yeah, and they sabotage the good old boy's RV. They put epoxy on the
gas pedal.
Right.
Top and bottom.
Probably just dry up and just be kind of slick by the time the guy drove.
You never
cartoon
know.
Cartoon logic.
Right. Sabotage the cop cars by putting something in their tires. And sneak in the women's restroom.
Yeah, it's great. And we have John Candy again as Mercer. I love that he just wants to hear him sing.
Yeah.
It's so great. Like, they're not going anywhere. Let's hear him sing.
I like that, yeah.
And we have the great scene. So instead of... He goes up to a table in the balcony, I believe, with two other cops. And we have the great quotable line. He's excited to see the Blues Brothers sing. I love it. He's so good in this. But this is the, like, orange whip? Orange whip? You know? You want an orange whip?
I got it. I mean... I don't know why that's, like, the famous line from John Candy in this.
I think it's awesome. I think the Car 55 line later on is better, but this is a good line. So we have the Blues Brothers concert. It's good. It's a concert film, though. And after the concert, not after the concert. Concert's still kind of going on. And Jake and Elwood are backstage. And they run into a guy from Clarion Records who has $10,000 cash on them to give to them for an advance. It's cartoon logic. I love it, though.
Yeah. I like that they did one song, basically.
Yeah.
And they took a break off stage because I guess the heat was on. And they get this recording contract. Then they sneak out.
Well, any band that could fill the Palace Theater in one day, probably a big deal.
And that band could just jam for hours and nobody would care because it's still amazing.
It is.
Like, who needs lead singers with that band?
Yeah. Have Cab do a few more.
Yeah.
And the Clarion Records guy also used to be a bouncer there, I believe he says.
And he gives them the way out.
Yeah, there's a secret passage underneath the drummer's riser, so they split.
Somehow Carrie Fisher knew about that place.
Yeah, somehow she's just in the tunnels waiting for him.
With an assault rifle.
Shooting him up. And we finally get her her backstory. She was basically stood up by Jake at the altar.
And I must kill you and your... Something, what was it, Slimeball or something like that?
Slimeball brother, Nerf herder.
And she could have totally murdered them. She had an assault rifle, she's shooting everywhere except them.
She, by all rights, in any other movie, would have murdered them with the amount of bullets she shot in their direction.
Jake goes into full-on begging mode, throwing every excuse ever conceived at her.
And then does the takes off his glasses. It's so great, because they kiss, and then he just...
pushes her in the mud.
Let's go. Then they split. And that's when we have Twiggy waiting. They start the car, and we have the famous line, you know.
The one we opened with.
Yeah.
They have the clip from the opening of the episode. They yell, hit it. They take off, knock the speaker off the car. Cops notice and start shooting like crazy, so they're dead. But not.
Twiggy waiting outside a motel, looking super bummed.
And all the cops exit the arena.
Is she hot to you?
I don't know. She was young and not bad.
She's not hot to me.
I would call her the hot woman in this movie because she kind of is. That's her part. Carrie Fisher was a looker. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I've never understood Twiggy.
But Twiggy's role in this was as the hot girl, basically.
Yeah.
Nowadays in credits, without giving the character a name, she'd be listed as hot girl.
Yeah, they should have gotten Brinkley.
I didn't find her that
Me great. Either, but it just works for the 80s a little better than Twiggy. No offense, Twiggy. I know you're a huge fan.
You never know.
The car chases are indescribably amazing.
They are. But every scene you see 100 cop cars crash.
It's so funny because this is like Mad Max level of attention to detail with car crashes and stuff. But for a John Landis comedy movie. John Candy's car ends up in the back of a semi that doesn't stop or notice for some reason.
Yeah, they just keep going.
And I love that line. He's just kind of in the back seat and he leans to the front. What car are we?
The driver's upside down.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, can you hand me that? And then asks, what car are we?
Says 55 and oh, this is car 55. We're in a truck.
That was great.
The car chase is remarkable. This is the type of ending that a movie like It Seemed Like a Good Idea at the time, I feel like, was trying to do. You put all these things up in the air, and then you have this big ending craziness montage. But it works in this one.
It does. I like that the good old boys, because of the epoxy on the gas pedal, they're beating cops. They're like swerving between cops. And they pass them.
World's fastest RV.
Yeah. But they pass up Jake and Elwood, and that's it.
So the Nazis hear that car they've been looking for is being chased, and they take off to go chase him. I'm not a big fan of the technique that they use to defeat the Nazis in this, because it's kind of goofy and ridiculous, but it's funny. The joke pays off. But yeah, they drive off, and apparently it's the world's tallest bridge, because they are thousands of feet in the air.
The Nazis have joined the chase. They're kind of overtaking the cops now in the chase. And we get a speed scene where they're going to the end of a overpass. And they almost jump it. They stop. The Nazis don't.
Yeah, it's weirder than that, though.
Because you see the Nazis falling.
Well, they like back up or something and then fly over top of the Nazis.
They hit it in reverse. And somehow flip backwards and spin around and land going forward.
They did like an emolument over the Nazis.
It was amazing. It's just cartoon logic. Just very cartoonish.
What? They're on a mission from God.
There you go.
Yeah, and they fly, and that bridge is thousands of feet in the air.
They dropped this car from a plane. And it was great. That's more cartoon.
It is awesome.
It was Wile E. Coyote.
And we just have them looking shocked, Henry Gibson looking shocked, and his buddy driving the car turns to him and does I've always loved you. Create that giant crater falling through.
Wile E. Coyote.
It's wonderful. This movie rules. So they pull up at the office of the assessor, and they're just sort of barricading doors behind them as they show up at this building.
They stop the car, get out, and start running away. The Bluesmobile falls apart.
I love it. It did its job.
I love that they barricade all the doors.
Yeah, every single door.
They go through a door, they put stuff in front of it.
It's so smart. And what's amazing, when they pull up out front, they show the statues. There is a statue that looks exactly like Scott Bakula.
Really?
Yes, it's the Bakula statue.
Interesting.
I got to try and get a screen capture of it. It's Bakula.
Nice.
So they're going through, a guy gives them directions. This is Grand Theft Auto 5-star achievement, because the military is showing up.
They've got
up.
Everything. They've got the hut-hut cops. They have the army. They have tanks. They have helicopters.
Every time you cut to it, they do go hut-hut.
I've got it here. They're the hut-hut cops. And they're not the military. They're like SWAT or something.
Yeah. The amount of people that are after just two people is so hilarious to me.
And they're trying to get in the door that they barricaded, because there's no other doors to that building. They've got the army, tanks, helicopters, and then we get cops rappelling from the roof.
Every time you say hut-hut cops, I'm going to lose it.
They're the hut-hut cops. Come on.
It's so perfect.
So they go up the elevator. They got directions to go to where they needed to go.
And so we have the girl from Ipanema elevator music. A lot of movies use that. There's like a...
It fits.
Yeah, ghost ship. It might come from this. Probably does.
Elwood destroys that elevator. That panel...
Yeah.
Is they're going to have to replace it completely. Yeah.
More barricading. Get to the office of the assessor. In 5 minutes.
They barricade the stairs. They barricade the office door. And the assessor's not there.
Yeah, it says back in 5 minutes.
And they just stand there.
They just wait patiently. And it's so tense because you see the cops and the police and the military gaining on them.
And they're cool as a cucumber. They're just perfectly fine waiting.
Finally, assessor comes out, peeks his head out of the door. Steven Spielberg.
That's awesome.
He's so good in this, too.
Why couldn't he have some of that talent in the last movie?
I know. This is his mea culpa. Like, well, I'll do Landis's good movies. No offense to Steven Spielberg. You know, he's a big fan. But, you know, 1941 is not a good one.
The army shoots down the stairs door, and then they smash through the office door. They get the receipt from the assessor.
And then the handcuffs are slapped on.
And then we get them in jail.
Singing Jailhouse Rock, which, have you heard the lyrics to Jailhouse Rock?
I have, I don't think I pay attention.
Jailhouse Rock has some prison sex stuff in it. Here's the line from Jailhouse Rock that makes it creepy. Number 47 said to number 3, "You're the cutest jailbird I ever did see. I sure would be delighted with your company. Come on and do the Jailhouse Rock with me." There's nice. No such thing as co-ed prison.
So Jailhouse Rock is a term for sex, according to those lyrics right there.
I think it's for prison sex. Yeah, it ends with them just playing Jailhouse Rock in jail. I kind of like that they end up in jail.
It's like, good.
Yeah, they got busted, but they were redeemed.
Airheads. Airheads got it from this.
Yeah. I love this movie so much.
I'm pleasantly surprised.
Looking back, though, like Aykroyd said that cocaine was part of the budget for this movie. You can see it in Belushi. He was kind of a drug monster at this point. He was a mess. Like, he would show up at random people's houses. Like, at one point, he disappeared from the filming, and Aykroyd found, like, one house with a light on in the neighborhood where they were filming, and knocked on the door, and they were like, "Oh, you must be here for Mr. Belushi." Apparently, he had knocked on their door and asked for, like, a glass of milk, and then fell asleep on their couch.
Wow.
So Aykroyd used to call him America's Guest. That's a little story I read.
Like Bill Murray that crashes at your house.
Right. I just got to get famous enough to get there. So this movie's great. I mean, it's a little long, I think, but overall, it really breathes and it holds up so well.
I'm happy with it.
Super good. And next week's going to be awesome, too. We've got Stripes.
One of my favorites.
Love Stripes. There's no bad in the horizon. We got Stripes and we got Heavy Metal. I'm psyched for you to...
You're what?
I'm psyched. What did I say? Stiked? I'm psyched.
Were you about to say stoked?
Yeah, I'm stoked and psyched. I'm
You're stiked. Okay.
I'm psyched for you to see Heavy Metal because I grew up watching that. I can't believe you never saw that.
I don't remember it. I might have.
Oh, man. I'm so stiked. Yeah, I don't know. I think we should put a cap on it. We're good, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, guys. See you next week for Stripes.
Well, thanks for listening, guys.
You can find us on Twitter at popcorn_with.
We're on Facebook. You can find our website, popcornwith.com. Email us at podcast@popcornwith.com.
And please do. Nobody's. We have a phone number. You can call. We'll respond to stuff. We'll put it on the show if you want. Feel free.
What's the phone number?
Something. Look it up.
No, you're going to say it.
We're in the yellow pages, guys.
No, we're not. Stop lying. Here you go.
You can call us at 470-729-BUCK.
Love to get some response from you people. We're doing all the work here. Join in.
Great call to action. Hey, idiots.
No, we're the idiots. We need help.
All right. Well, thanks for listening and tell a friend. And, yeah. See you next week, because I'm stiked for Stipes.
Bye.
Hit it!